Welcome back to Cal Lunches, where the beer is warm, the women cold, and the bullets fly thick. I am the deputy, Stu Kaufman.
And I am a tiny burro unfit for this task, Amy McLeod.
And I love a pretty red dress. My name is Melissa Huggins.
And tonight we watched, from 1970, Two Mules for Sister Sarah, directed by Don Siegel and starring Clint Eastwood and Shirley MacLaine. The movie that will cause you too to believe a nun can say ass.
I timestamped that so you can...
Oh my god.
All right, I'll just throw it out there now. If anyone wants to hear Clint Eastwood saying the word ass... cue up this film and go to 37 minutes, 57 seconds.
Ass.
You are welcome.
He says it with authority and direction, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Ass.
Also, yes. Clint Eastwood had great looks of incredulity throughout this movie.
He did.
I just think Shirley MacLaine is just such a joy in this movie. Like... the fact that she continues to confuse and flabbergast him through this entire movie is just so joyful. I love this.
She just like nuns her way just right through him. Like just all around, like just going to nun at you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Although her eyelashes, I want to be like, can we please at some point have a nun in one of these westerns that does not have eyelashes that they could take off like as a plane, like just get them fluttering, right? And she could
hand
fly
glide
away, like the rest of the nun outfit, excellent, perfect, no notes. Why the eyelashes?
Why the come hither eyelashes?
We saw that in Call Me Hallelujah or whatever the hell that movie was called.
Her full face of makeup.
Yes. Oh, God. It's like the nun outfit can get filthy throughout the film, but the face. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The face has to be perfect.
Must remain perfect.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amy, you want to tell us what happened in this here picture show?
I sure do. So... as we've kind of mentioned, we have Clint Eastwood and Shirley MacLaine as our leading actors here. Clint Eastwood plays the character of Hogan, who is a sort of soldier of fortune kind of fella, just doing work for money, whatever they'll pay him for. And Shirley MacLaine plays Sister Sarah, who is, we are led to believe, is a nun. We'll just say that. For most of the film, she is a nun.
Hint, the eyelashes are a hint.
Yeah, I think that's a hint. It's hard to say, though, with the Alleluia nun. Well, she wasn't really a nun either.
She also was not a nun.
So no. There you go. Fake eyelashes does not a nun make. that's what we've learned here today. But we start off with Hogan. He stops three men from assaulting Sister Sarah, so we're off to a strong start. Little uncomfortable, but he quickly dispatches the three horrible gentlemen. And then we kind of learn a little bit more about Sister Sarah. She says she's a nun on a mission. And she is heading... one was heading north and one was heading south. I can't remember which direction. So he's kind of like, well, going to wash my hands of this. You're rescued. You're fine. You know, let's part ways. But kind of against his better judgment, he does decide that he'll help her a little bit, just because it's like when he finds out she's a nun, there's a great moment where he's just like,
Jesus Christ,
which was also a great line read from Clint Eastwood there, because she's like, get dressed and we'll, you know, figure something out. And then she's like in her full nun
habit.
She's got everything. And she's like, thank you, Brother Hogan, and all this stuff. And
all my life, I will pray to the Virgin to protect you from harm.
Jesus Christ.
It is an excellent nun outfit. Like, it is a great habit.
It looks legit as heck. So he's like, oh, okay. So, you know, he feels a little more inclined to help her as she is a holy woman. And he tries to pass her off to some French cavalry, but then she reveals that the French are after her because she had been raising money for the Mexican revolutionaries, which I thought he might question a little more. He was clearly shocked by that news. It was like, okay, well, so then he kind of helps her even more to hide from the French. And then their goals kind of line up because Hogan has been hired by the revolutionaries to kind of help take over a large garrison. And he was on his way to scout the place that Sarah is leaving. And she has like all this awesome intel. She's like, I know exactly how many people are in there. The church is right next door. The church's roof is higher than, you know, she's got like all the info that he could want. And she says, hey, their Bastille Day's coming up, and last year they were all freaking toasted. They were drunk by noon. So if you're gonna do it, that's the day to do it. So he's super excited and like, all right, let's get you. We'll you need to get to the revolutionaries so they can hide you, and I need to get there so I can propose this plan, execute said plan, get money, and then he wants to go to San Francisco and open up a big old gambling hall is his kind of end goal here. But on the way, they get sidetracked. Hogan gets shot with an arrow at one point. Sister Sarah. Yeah.
I have a note that I'm like, I don't think that's how first aid works.
We're going to talk too about that one. It's kind of like a Sierra Madre situation of like, I don't think that's how you would do that. But yeah, so she tends to his wounds. And then they also blow up a bridge with a train on it to keep that garrison from getting resupplied, which is also a great scene because Clint Eastwood is too drunk to shoot. And it's just fun. And then they finally meet up with our revolutionary friends, and it's not all good news because they're poorly supplied, they're low on numbers, they have the spirit, they're ready to fight, and then Sarah comes in clutch again by kind of collecting jewelry and anything that she can find to raise money to buy a fuck ton of dynamite, I think is the technical term.
That is correct.
So, yeah. So now that they're properly supplied, they head to Chihuahua, where the garrison is. And we are then with the reveal of Sister Sarah's actual identity, is that she is not a nun, but a prostitute. Hogan is irritated at the deception, but I thought Sarah brought up some great points.
Yeah, so would we say that Sister Sarah is from the nunnery that Hamlet was telling Ophelia to go to? Sorry, Shakespeare joke, I'm sorry!
There's no place in Westerns for Shakespeare. Half of these movies have Shakespeare references.
For the people that will get that joke, you're welcome.
Us do niche jokes that like five people will get? Never.
We're not in that habit at all.
No. We're a professional podcast. But yes. So that gets revealed. But she was, you know, everything else about her was true. She was trying to help the revolutionaries, and that's why the French are after her. They're thwarted again when they discover the garrison is not, in fact, full of drunk Frenchmen as they wanted. Because by blowing up the train, instead of partying on Bastille Day, they are all on high alert. They also find they were going to have a tunnel that was going to go through from the basement. I believe, I don't know if it was the church or the brothel.
The brothel.
Through the brothel. But there's a grate that is shut that they can't get through. So Sarah, again, coming in clutch, offers herself up to be turned in to the French to allow Hogan to kind of get in and then open the hatch so that they can come in, you know, an element of surprise. Since they don't have the numbers, they have to use surprise to get the upper hand. This is then followed by an incredibly bloody battle, like surprisingly graphic violence. But the revolutionaries win. Hogan gets the money, and they ride off, him and Sarah ride off into the sunset, supposedly to San Francisco, and Sarah is still on her teeny tiny burrow, which was like my favorite thing.
With a teeny tiny parasol.
Yes.
Oh my God. Ben watched this with me, and he, before she came on screen, he's like, I need her to still be riding the burrow. I need her to be riding the burrow. And as soon as she, he was just like, yes.
I was the same way, because I was like, I don't see her yet. I was like, is she going to be on like a big fancy horse, or is she going to be on the tiny little burrow? And then I was very pleased.
Yeah.
I also like that, like, he, earlier in the movie, like, Clint Eastwood also does this thing where he basically says, ooh, girls are yucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, like, here he is, like, his pack horse is now covered in girly stuff, and he's just like, yep, let's do this.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And, like, you know that, like, because I love in the movie when he talks about, like, well, she asks him, like, what are you going to do with the money? And she's like, are you going to get a ranch or whatever? He's like, no, I'm not going to get a ranch. I have to get up in the morning. I have to work hard. And he's like, no, I'm going to have a casino in San Francisco, and it's going to be great, and I'm going to have roulette and blackjack and all this kind of stuff. And I watching them ride off together, I'm like, they are going to have the flippin' best casino in all of San Francisco. Oh,
yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
He's going to be like swanning around in a suit, and she is going to be watching those gaming tables like a hawk and make him so much money.
Yes. Yes.
She knows every trick in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they'll do prostitution on the side. Who knows?
Who knows? Like, either way, it will be fantastic. Like, you know, stop the saloon search right there. I'm going there.
Yeah, we haven't even seen, it's not even built yet, and it's the winner.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's in San Francisco. It's probably got a great view of the water. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I also liked about that scene where he's like, you got to get up like with the sunset and you work till the sunset, and then you're in your saddle all day. And that was after, like, Sarah is like, give me 5 more minutes to sleep, and he's like, nope, I'm up with the sun. We ride from sunrise to sunset. And I'm like, that's what you're doing now, man. And you're like, I would rather die than do that. And I'm like, you're doing it now.
I know.
Eastwood got to get paid, son.
He's like, I'm working to get paid so I can stop doing this.
Yeah, just like everybody mm-hmm. who has a job.
Yes.
I hate this.
Hogan has the answer to the question. So there's the question that we were all asked at a point in our lives, like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do for a career? And Hogan has the answer that we all have deep down inside of us, which is, I don't want to do anything. Nothing.
I would like to have fun and enjoy my life and not work.
Exactly. Yeah. How about not work?
Yeah.
Is about there a way that I can do that?
When I grow up, I want to be a rich bitch. Thank you.
Mm-mm. Yes.
I want to live in a castle. And yeah, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have some lands that I can stroll across.
Mm-hmm.
Boat.
I would like a house that I don't have to clean myself.
Oh, mm-hmm. Now you're talking.
Right? It's the little things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the little things.
Yeah.
But the chief among them is not working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not toil. No toil, please.
No toil. No, nobody to tell me what to do. Just be like, nah, I'm not doing that today.
Mm-hmm. No.
Speaking of living, I just want to start off by just saying, like, how lived in this movie was.
Yes.
It was, like, there's, except for Sarah's face, this was a lived-in movie.
Well.
Yeah.
And even her face. So, like, one thing I kind of loved is, so you see her, right? And she, her nun outfit is great. And the only thing that's off at first are those lashes, which you could sort of think to yourself, oh, it's the 60s,
it's 70s. A movie,
yeah, it's a movie. Okay. Right. And you're always kind of suspicious of her because I feel like in Westerns, they're never a nun. They're never actually a nun.
Oh yeah.
We'll have to find one where there is a nun.
Right?
A real nun.
But as the movie kind of goes on and she's doing all this stuff, you sort of do question, like, wait, is she a nun? Maybe she is a nun. And then slowly things start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, she is not a nun. Mm-hmm. Or she's like not the kind of nun we think she is.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I was in the same thing. I was like, she's either a very worldly nun, mm-hmm. or she is a secret agent. Because you see her, she picks up like the cigarette, mm-hmm. and then like makes sure he's not looking. And she's like, oh, thank God. Like, oh,
getting a drag.
I needed that.
Saying things like, oh, I could sleep anywhere. And she totally cannot sleep mm-mm. anywhere.
Or when she like takes a belt of the whiskey or whatever it is mm-hmm. he has.
She drinks a quarter of the bottle.
Yeah, and then he's like, you need to, you know, I need you steady. I don't want you falling off that horse. And she's like, the Lord will turn it into water.
I was like, that is the opposite of how that works. Yeah,
I know. No. I was like, that's not what, but okay.
Lord. And also, well, and the other thing, like the other hints that she's not telling any truths. Like, because when she goes into the one point in the movie when they're trying to gather intelligence in the French camp, and mm-hmm. her whole story to him on how she infiltrated the fort was that she speaks Spanish, French, and English, and she was teaching the French officers English, and that's why Mother Superior sent her over there, blah, blah, blah. But when
she was teaching him something, all
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, she was. But when they go into that little French camp in the one town, and she's going in there to get some intelligence, she can't speak French.
Not
like,
a lick.
She doesn't. Nope. And that's another, like, wait a second. Who is this woman? I thought that was done really well, that there were all these little clues, but it wasn't obvious, like the nun in Alleluia, who it's like, this woman is so clearly not a nun, it hurts. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they were going for a similar vibe, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The garter belt versus Sarah's shoes, which are like, I look like it's like, what a detail for a movie in 1970 that a woman's shoes, like, yeah, that's a Victorian working woman's shoes there. What the fuck?
Right.
Would you like to know a fun fact?
Sure.
About this film. So, Sister Sarah was originally going to be, there's a couple actresses, but one of them was going to be Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh.
Huh.
But she wanted it to be filmed in Spain so she could hang out with her husband, who was shooting a film in Spain at the time. But she was the one who got Clint Eastwood on. And they had to make some changes because Elizabeth Taylor was going to be playing the role of Sister Sarah as a Mexican woman. Which Shirley MacLaine... I mean, Elizabeth Taylor should be doing that either.
No.
But, you know, but it's a fun fact. So,
okay,
we got nice pale Shirley MacLaine.
I mean,
which I think is better.
But I mean, if you look at what's her name? You just said it,
Elizabeth Taylor.
If you look at Elizabeth Taylor, like Elizabeth Taylor is also very pale,
right?
Like, no, she's got dark hair, not red hair.
Yeah, she's got darker hair, which I think is probably what they would.
But she also has like light eye. She played National Velvet, for goodness sakes. Like, I'm just small English child. Like, I
okay. Just had to share that because I read that and I couldn't keep it to myself.
I saw this one detail too. So the title of the movie is Two Mules for Sister Sarah. Sarah is spelled S-A-R-A. But the character's name is given an H at the end in the end credits. It's dumb.
Yeah, that's just a oversight.
That's pedantry from me. You're welcome.
Stu's pedantry corner.
Yes.
But
there weren't enough eyelets on those shoes.
If the shoes were the thing that bothered you the most.
Oh yeah, this movie's garbage.
For like 20 seconds.
Sarah's shoes. Fuck this movie.
Well, they seem to always give like fancy Victorian lady shoes to nuns because that was this again same thing in Alleluia. They were like fancy shoes. That's what it is. That's what nuns wear.
Yeah. I've met a nun before.
Let me tell you, if you want historical accuracy in your Western movies, may I direct you to Sabata the Killer?
Oh, God. No.
From personal experience, from the nuns at all the schools I went to as a 13-year Catholic school veteran, they mostly wore like New Balances. Sneakers.
Oh, that tracks. A sensible shoe.
They were like 70 and 80, so they were going to wear something comfy.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame them. Mm-hmm. I don't blame them.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I did enjoy Personal Question Hour with Hogan and Sister Sarah, where Sister Sarah's like, aren't you like, you're married or girlfriend or anything? And he's kind of like, no. And then he's all like, have you ever kissed a boy before?
Right. Oh my God. At one point I wanted to be like, Clint, we get it. You think she's hot. Calm
right
down. Like,
right.
Like, even if she's not a nun, cool your flipping jets, buddy.
Yeah.
Dunk your head in some water, my dude. Come on.
Yeah. Like, he super likes this nun. He's like, nuns shouldn't be this pretty. Why are you so pretty? And also a nun.
Like, maybe she just wanted to be a nun, sir. Maybe that's what she wanted. It doesn't matter. She is allowed to be one, no matter how pretty she is. Mm-hmm. Fuck right off with that. I was glad when they finally kind of knocked that off.
Yes, and I was glad that it didn't carry through, like, mm-hmm. that wasn't a constant source of teasing. Like, that would have been annoying. Like, look, leave her alone. He, like, the only other time he got back into that was when he was super duper drunk, and I was like, all right.
Yeah, that tracks. That tracks.
Yeah, for that is, yeah, then it makes sense because he's lost his inhibitions, and he's just, he's in a lot of pain, and he's very drunk.
He's drunk in searing pain. His brain is just firing at all.
He's just anything. Like, I want to touch your butt.
I want to touch your butt. I don't want to be in pain.
don't kill me. Like, please. So, yeah, I guess we should. That was when Clint Eastwood's character gets shot in the shoulder with an arrow. So he has to, like, he gets himself nice and drunk because I'm sure it's very painful.
They don't have access to ether.
I guess. And he's got to talk Sarah through how to treat his wound, and this is what he has her do. He has her carve like a little notch in the shaft of the arrow. Now, the arrow has gone through his shoulder, so like the arrow head is not in him. It's on the other side of his shoulder, which is good.
No, it hasn't gone through yet.
It was through. When you turn around, it was through. One scene, it wasn't through. That's one of the goofs.
Oh.
Well, no, it didn't get through until she hit it with the knife and forced it through.
Watch it again. You can see she goes around him at one point. It was through.
Bull.
It's in the IMDb goofs that at one point it's not through, and the other point it is when it should have been.
Right. That said, it's at an awkward angle, and be like, for it to go through there, it's going through his shoulder blade. I don't buy it.
Yeah, it's not great. So she's got to carve a little groove in the shaft of the arrow, and he wants her to put gunpowder on it. The logic being, and then he gives her a knife and a gun. She used the flat of the knife, because she, you know, you cut off part of the arrow here. Use the flat of the knife and the gun to, like, whap it the rest of the way through. And he's going to light the gunpowder so that it will cauterize the wound on the inside.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Which, to me, I don't think you want to cauterize the inside of your body.
There was so much of that where I was like, this is not how first aid works.
That scene went on way too long.
Yeah.
Way too long.
Yes.
Now, I will say it was in, like, real time. I actually kind of enjoyed it. A couple of those scenes that went on a while, because I felt like it really showcased Sarah's bravery. Like, she's clearly in a situation that she has never had to do anything like this before. And she is just, you know, white knuckling her way through this.
That was one of the things I liked, because I wrote down, I love, you know, them fighting over who saved who more. And, like, her hands are shaking. I enjoyed that because it also lends credence to their they're like under a deadline. They have to get to this train trestle to blow it up. And this is slowing them down. And she has to do this. And she's like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. But like, also, I don't want to do this, but I can't do it without him. But, like, I can't do it by myself.
But also, right. like, she is in danger without him. Like, he's the only thing keeping her safe. So I like that she is constantly running, like, on this edge of, if I get left behind by this man, I am going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, I tried that, and you saw what almost happened. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So, yeah, that scene, it does, it's like 10 minutes of them dealing with this arrow wound. And then that's followed by them going to the bridge, where they then Sarah also has to face her fear of heights.
Which, the whole bridge sequence where he uses her shoulder to fire the gun, it was just the best. Like, sober up or I'll kill you, she yells at him.
Yeah. And oh, yes. And
calls him a dumb bastard or something.
The other great line is,
God help us, no good atheist to shoot straight.
Yes.
That was great. Because he got himself freaking drunk as a skunk to deal with the arrow. I mean, I think the only thing they did right, to go back to the first aid, is that you should push it out. Like, you know, you don't pull it. You push it out. I mean, obviously you should go to a hospital. Don't remove it. Leave it alone. But that was not an option. Gunpowder, no.
So another,
and then the moss. They stuffed it with moss?
Yeah. So another tip from the cowpunchers. If you are ever impaled, don't pull the object impaling you out. No. Just leave it in there and go to the doctor. Do not follow the Hogan method.
Leave it to a trained medical professional.
don't do CPR, flap in the arms, Sierra Madre style.
You're right. Stabilize that shit and then just get to a hospital.
Right.
Don't use gunpowder to cauterize things if you've been impaled.
Yes. Certainly don't use it to cauterize the inside of a wound.
My God.
I've seen that done on I've read that you can do that on the outside. You mix it with a little bit of liquor and you do it that way. But I've never heard of doing it internally.
That seems bad.
I feel like though, this kind of stuff is so common in Westerns. Like,
this is true.
This is just how it's like, it's again the trope of it's a wound, but it's not in a vital area. But it's still like we have to deal with it. And it's always an arrow or a bullet or something like that. It was cool as heck that she had to like light the gunpowder on the arrow and then like hammer it through his body with the butt of a gun. Like,
yeah, it was pretty rad. That was pretty rad.
I was like, this is kind of metal.
And it was like, it was neat because she had the knife at one angle and the gun at another. It's like, it's almost like she's like, the power of Christ compelling you, arrow. Like, I enjoyed that imagery a lot.
Speaking of Christ, as the movie went along, it became more apparent that that Sister Sarah is not a nun. There's a scene where they're trying to get together enough valuables to buy dynamite to go take on the French in Chihuahua. And throughout the movie, like, I see her just like holding the cross in such a way. I'm like, first off, it's not a crucifix.
It was a rosary.
Yes, it was a rosary with a cross attached to it. And I kept thinking, but like, that's a pretty big cross. I bet that's silver. I bet that's solid silver. I bet that's money. It was money.
So, okay. When I was in high school, we had a deacon who taught one of the religion classes we had to take. And I think it's October is the month of the rosary. And we would like pray the rosary. We would play like a decade in the beginning of class or whatever. And I remember he was like, you all want to see a rosary? You want to see a rosary? And when I tell you, he pulled this rosary out, the beads individually were the size of my fist.
What?
And damn.
And the cross, the crucifix on the end of it, was the size of my head.
Wow. Wow.
You could kill a man with that thing.
You could. And it was a full rosary. Like, it was the whole
thing. So I want to see a giant? Like,
yeah.
That's for Andre the Giant.
It was the...
No.
He like, pulled it out of nowhere. And he's like, yeah, let's pray the rosary. It was like, oh, my God.
I pray so
he's like,
hard.
He's, like, swinging it around. It's like, oh, my God.
Let's fucking pray.
Right, so like, again, very metal.
I want to see that Western where a priest just pulls that up and like, let's pray.
Well, so oh, her, God. Like, with this giant cross, I was like, that's nothing.
Yeah, I've seen better. Right. That's some weak shit right there.
You're all
right,
not truly Catholic.
We need to find this spaghetti Western that's got, like, a quick zoom on the priest. And he's like, let's pray. And he pulls out this shit.
You know there's got to be one. There's got to be. We had the guy who had the exploding book where he was like, he'll throw the good book at you. And I was like,
throw the fucking book at people.
It's the good book. It explodes.
I don't know if God would approve of you exploding his book.
What if it's heretics or demons or something?
I don't know. It just seems wrong.
The devil, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, if it's the King James Version, you get it.
Oh!
Isn't there, oh God, isn't it called like the Devil's Bible where there's a mistake in it? In like, I think it's a mistake in like the Ten Commandments where it says like, thou shalt murder or something like
that.
Oh
God,
like,
yeah.
Like it's a mistake like that. And it's like, the Devil's Bible.
Thou shalt kill. And they'd be like, see, my Bible says I can kill, yeah. So I'm killing.
I'm doing all the killing I want. No yeah. one can stop
I'm
me.
I'm not checking any, I'm not confirming anything with anybody.
Oh, no, it was a typo. Don't care.
Don't care.
The Lord said it.
In this book I found.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. But yeah, that scene with her just like, because he's so drunk, the train is right there. They need to shoot the dynamite. And she just like slaps the shit out of him. Because he's like, make me some coffee. I'll sober up. And she's like, oh, I'll make you some coffee.
I'll fix you some hot coffee. Sober up. You sober up, you dirty bastard, or I'll kill you.
And I think in that moment, I was like, this is the most nun thing she's done through this whole movie. With her being like, you are going to do this shit. And you're going to do it now, and I'm not putting up with any of your bullshit. I'm like, oh, God, I'm having flashbacks.
I did my homework. I'm sorry.
Have some corporal punishment.
Shit.
Not my knuckles.
Oh, man.
But
I also have an... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but I love that she got him through that to be able to do it, and that she was like, I love that whole bit.
Yes, because he, like, missed, and then she's like, gets the freaking thing again, and like, go, we're not leaving here until you blow up that train, mister.
You have one job.
We're not leaving here until you blow up that train. Oh, shit. Yeah, this movie was full of excellent explosions.
They used a lot of spicy salami in this one.
Oh, my God. They had a whole tractor trailer full of the shit. They just backed it up.
The pinata alone.
The Trojan pinata.
Oh my God.
That was great. I knew that, like, the pinata was from Mexican culture. I knew that. But it was odd to me that, like, Clint Eastwood's character is like, what the fuck is a pinata? But I guess they're so pervasive in society now. I'm like, I guess at one point they weren't very common.
But what I loved was, like, when he says to them, like,
how long a fuse are you putting in?
Approximately 30 seconds. That'll give them enough time to get on down the street.
They are going to be women and children, remember.
Any longer fuse might be seen. Just don't make the children too young or the women too old. And tell them not to trip.
With this pinata. So they can run away.
Yeah, and he's like, well, how much fuse did you put in there? And he's like, 30 seconds. That'll give them enough time to, like, GTFO. Yeah, and then that line about...
Mm-hmm. Hey, make sure they're
nobody
not,
trip.
Make sure nobody's too old or too little.
Right, very, like, just get your good runners.
Very little room for error.
Yes.
But I just, like, so love that the Trojan pinata. It's just,
It was great. And the French guy was like, oh, how touching. Isn't this so nice? Yeah. Like, oh, a pinata. How lovely.
And then everything exploded. Yeah,
let me mansplain what this is. Or like, let me colonizer explain what this is.
Yeah. It was very much like, oh, what a lovely quaint.
It's so quaint. Oh, isn't this just delightful? Like, oh, shut up, ass.
Right. No. Yeah, you're going to have to clip that Clint Eastwood saying ass and just plug that in various places.
I think it's going to be part of our new array of
sound effects.
Sound just effects.
So another note I have is Sister Sarah is here. Trade your mule for a burro.
I thought you were going to say exchange your mule for a dynamite.
Yeah.
But
her mule gets lame, so he's like, well, I'll leave you in this village because I got shit to do.
And she's like, fuck no, you're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved how resourceful she was, because it's like she saw that dude like just ambling by with his little tiny burrow, and she's like, I'm going to get that burrow. Give me like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Clint Eastwood's like, that guy cheated the shit out of you, but whatever. I guess you got a burrow now.
She was, well, and her resourcefulness is at the beginning with the rattlesnake, which, okay, to be fair, the first time she sees it, that is a fake rattlesnake that he kills. It is so clearly a fake rattlesnake. But like, so it's the beginning of the movie. She has just revealed that the French are after her. And so they run into, what is that? Is like an old, like,
I don't know if it's an old mission or an old fort.
And they run in there and she goes to go into a room and you hear the rattlesnake and she's like, I can't go in there. And he's like, why? And she's like, rattlesnake.
Yeah. I ain't going in there. I get bit.
Right. And so he goes in.
He like steps on it and cuts off his head.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. In the most graphic manner possible. I blocked it from my mind because I was so grossed out.
Yeah.
But I love when the French are like sneaking through, she's holding on to the dead body of the snake and she makes it rattle.
I love that.
And the French soldier goes, no, and like nopes right on out when he hears.
No,
he's like,
mon ami, no.
Like, it's just a snake, nothing here but snakes, it's cool.
Snakes all the way down, mon ami. Mm-hmm.
I loved that scene because he like heard it and was like, I don't get paid enough for this bullshit. Shit.
It was so clearly I do not get paid enough for to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen, Bastille Day is coming up, I'm not fucking it up now.
Mm-hmm. Like, look, I got some good shit back at the camp, and I ain't getting sick before Bastille Day.
I got some cheese. Mom sent a baguette. Nah, I'm not fucking it up now.
Yeah, but throughout the movie, so like the snake, the bridge, the arrow, like she is like on it through this whole. She has a job, and she's gonna get it done. It's like, well, she says in the beginning. And also, Stu, please tell me you thought this when she's like, I'm on a mission. And immediately my brain.
Oh, yeah. It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a half pack of cigarettes, a full tank of gas. It's night. We're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Yeah. That's exactly where I went.
Mission from God. I was waiting for her to say that, too. I was like, oh, that would have been great.
I'm on a mission. A mission from God.
The band, Eastwood, the band.
They have a pinata.
which is full of surprises that will just blow you away.
Mm-hmm. They were pretty cavalier at that last scene, throwing the dynamite around. I was like, I'm pretty sure you can't be that close to dynamite.
Especially with full sticks of dynamite, that seems exceedingly dangerous.
I'm surprised there was anything left of the fort itself.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, to me, I'm like, if they had that much dynamite, they should have just gotten a shit ton of pinatas and just hurled them over the wall and then just, there, your French problem solved.
Like, you block all the doors.
Yeah.
And then from the top of the church, just, like, bomb them with pinatas.
Yeah.
Here's some spicy salami inside.
Right. No more French. Bye-bye.
Au revoir.
adios.
Sacre bleu! Merde! Which tiny quibble about their strategy. It's like they're like, we're going to attack on Bastille Day. Like, don't you want to attack the morning after Bastille Day when they're hungover?
Well, it's better when they're super drunk and passed out.
But not hungover is better because that's what George Washington did. He attacked Trenton the day after Christmas when all the Hessians were nursing hangovers.
Well, it's unlucky to attack on Christmas.
It is. you can't. Santa will know.
Yes, and then you won't get any presents. Exactly. And George Washington had some things on that list.
And he was a very good boy that year. He didn't want to mess it up. You're right. Yes. How silly of me.
But like, who gives a shit about Bastille Day? Fuck him up. Sorry to any French listeners. I'm sure you're lovely.
Here's to the death of kings.
Which is ironic, then, that they did this on Bastille Day.
Mm-hmm. Well, France was run by Emperor Napoleon III, who, if I am led to believe, is the worst of Napoleons.
So technically, the Mexican revolutionaries were celebrating the holiday correctly.
Agreed. I think we can all agree. You know, agree to that. Yeah,
they were. They were like, you know what? We're gonna freaking kick out a monarch.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They're just the they went to the tell the French, you dumb bastards, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is
you're
what
supposed
we
to
need
topple
to do.
The monarchy.
Yeah.
But I'm always going to remember that Trojan pinata. Delicious.
That was great. And I thought, I mean, to me, I was like, don't you think they'd be a little suspicious that this, like, because she, like, lights the pinata. And then I'm like, it blows up pretty shortly after that, so it didn't matter. But I'm like, they put it down next to the door and then light it and then freaking book it.
It's like, here, we got this for you. Bye.
See you later. Don't worry about it. It's ticking. Don't worry about the ticking.
Oh, how what fun! I wonder what's inside.
Yes.
Just some nuts and some candy. You know, all that kind of good stuff.
What kind of nut ticks?
Well, do we want to talk about some segments?
Yes, but with one more note, which is at the beginning of the movie, Eastwood shoots the three dudes, and he follows the classic RPG rule. Loot the bodies.
Thank you. I had that note too. I was like, oh.
You love to see it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you see any other Western, they just shoot the dudes, leave them. They're like, no, loot the bodies.
Which came in handy. It was, which I liked, because when they get to the fort, it has like those little, or mission or whatever it is, has those really small little cutout windows in the stone.
And he puts all the guns.
Because I was all like, oh, he's going to make it seem like more than just him is there, because he's going to shoot from different places. But then Sarah has the non-violent option of scaring them with a rattlesnake, which much more effective.
Mm-hmm, indeed. But yeah, let's get into some segments here. I want to start off with Mel's costume corner.
Yes.
Because I liked everything I saw here, right down to the French military uniforms.
I have absolutely no complaints. I have one complaint. So I love the reveal when she is revealed to not be a nun and rips off the habit or the wimple and then goes over to because where the brothel is it's the old, I think, rectory or abbey where the priests had lived or the nuns had lived. And now all these prostitutes live in there, and she rips off the wimple and hugs the woman, who then just grab both handfuls of ass cheek and like grabs her by the ass.
Mel, you missed the obvious joke here. Sarah broke a habit.
She did.
Oh God!
Go to jail.
Get out of here.
Okay.
Cat is rubbing up against your microphone.
Yes. She just tipped it upside down. Thank you, Ariel. You're a great help.
Of course I am. But I loved the reveal moment. But I hate the fact that she immediately covers her hair back up with that stupid red scarf.
Right.
It annoyed the shit out of me. I'm like, what? It was sort of like what they did was like somebody was like, we have to make it very clear she's not a nun. And just having the wimple off wasn't apparently clear enough.
Right, just have her tie her hair back. It's already henna red.
She's got short, well, she has, like, short hair. So, like, yeah. Why does she have to cover it? To me, that made no sense. So, like, that was the one thing that if I had been there to give notes, I would have said, get rid of the red scarf. You don't need it. But it was, like, they had to be, like, she's a prostitute. Hold she's up. A scarlet how woman. Da-da-da-da-da. Symbolism.
Ariel somehow got her collar stuck on the microphone just now.
Of course.
How did you do that?
Cat's gonna cat.
And I think they wanted her to stand out because, like, they went into, it was, like, very dark places. So I think they also did that to be like, oh, there she is. But I agree. It was kind of like she just uncovered her hair. I felt like that was enough.
Yeah, same. Because the wimple is such a symbol of being a nun, right? Covering your hair.
Yeah.
But overall, though, I thought the costumes looked lived in. I liked that the revolutionaries looked a little bit tattered, but I loved, what is it, Colonel Beltran?
Mm-hmm.
I thought he looked great, very dashing.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. All of the people who played the Mexican extras were great. Like they I loved particularly the older woman who carries the pinata. I thought she was fantastic, how she looked, you know, all that kind of stuff. Again, though, with the only other, I guess the only other complaint was the bit of red face.
Yeah.
Could have done without that when they're confronted by the native, the indigenous people.
That scene I thought was very cringy. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He needed to get shot with an arrow, but it didn't need to be like, oh, she's holding up the magic cross. Oh, she's a weird magic lady. We're scared and going to run away.
I didn't the line, like that. Wild and pagan.
Like, yeah, we didn't need that. We didn't need that at all.
Yeah. Just have him get shot by an arrow and then have them run away. Like, that would have been fine.
My only I guess, critique of the costumes was what Clint Eastwood was wearing. Which I felt like he could have worn that at a truck stop in 1970 and fit in.
Too many layers.
Oh, yeah.
Too many layers. I would have liked, because he talks about being in the Civil War, it would have nice to have seen, like, some nod to that.
Yeah, a belt buckle, something.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like, nobody was too clean. Nobody was too dirty. They all looked... Like you said, like, it looks lived in, and that was so, no zippers.
Nice. I did like that they let Sister Sarah get sweaty. Like, you could see sweat beating on her face, and I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Which, black in the desert, let me tell you.
Well, and, like, Shirley MacLaine is a beautiful woman. Like, she was a beautiful woman then, beautiful woman when she's older, and... To have you sort of semi-question, like, is she a nun? And part of that came from how dirty she got, how, like, you know, in it she was. It wasn't like the other woman in Alleluia, where she does just stay pristine, even after being rolled up in a carpet and stuck on the back of a mule. Fine.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So really, no notes. I loved it. I thought it looked great.
But speaking of dirt, what do we have for a coot?
After all, he's not a bad old coot.
I didn't come up with much, which is to say nothing.
So I have very fringe things. I have some things to discuss for our coot watch. I don't know that I spotted any official real coots. The only person I had written down... was the bored papaya merchant who was just lazily dabbing the papaya with his little pom-pom.
Keep the flies off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if that's enough to call him a coot or if he's just like, whatever, I'm selling my papaya.
He's a country bumpkin. He's a yokel. He's just he's a guy.
I had the gatekeeper at the French fort. But even then I have a coot? ?
Yeah. The only other thing I had, and it does not make him a coot, but it made me laugh very much, was Clint Eastwood's character puts on his Tex personality.
Yeah, right.
To be like, I'm just a country boy here with this nun I found in my property in Texas. I was like, That character is very nearly a coot, but I was like, what accent? What are you doing, Clint? What are you?
So,
like, up to that point, I was like trying to figure out, like, what side of the Civil War was he on? I was like, oh yeah, he was on the North.
Yeah, so, it was the worst Southern accent, and I was like, why did he need an accent?
So, I think Hogan, if he had continued as he was without meeting Sarah, I think he was well on his way to becoming a coot.
Oh, no.
Because,
doubt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the man was one pack horse away from a mule. Like, it was gonna happen, you know?
Right.
And he was collecting his trinkets. He had so much shit on the back of that horse. Like, why? Why do you have?
Yeah.
Why are you traveling with this much crap, sir?
Right. It's like when you know you have a household and you have one dog. That's fine. You have two dogs. That's cool. You get that third dog, you're into dangerous territory. But as soon as you get that fourth dog, you're nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we could apply that same logic to Coot-dom. You have one pack horse, fine. You're traveling across the plains. Mm-hmm. Two,
what are you prospecting? Like, what are you doing?
That third pack horse, you're nuts. You're Coot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he was heading into that territory.
He would have ended up penniless on the streets of San Francisco, giving poor gambling advice to whoever would listen.
Exactly.
Like, nonsensical advice.
And he was, if he hadn't have met Sarah, he would have been afraid of women, I think. I think that would have grown into a fear of women.
He had that rant about, like, girls are yucky and they stink.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go to my treehouse.
And I did like where he's like, I don't think the arrow hit my heart. And I was like, well, that's in your shoulder, sir. And he's like, but some women tell me my heart's not in the right place. And I was like, if your heart is up there, then you really need to see a doctor.
Oh, buddy.
So many issues.
Yes.
But
yeah, that's, yeah, I can see that. Had he not met Sarah, he would be well on his way to Coot-dom. But yeah, no solid coots in this film.
Nope. Just the fringe, the very taste of coot. And but something we can say solidly that this movie had is a drinking establishment we would all visit. El Gato Negro.
Yes.
I would spend an afternoon in that cantina.
Straight up. Although they need to remove that kitten from how close it is to that fire.
Yeah, no. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Its whiskers were singed.
Yeah. Get the cat out of the fire. Let's get some chips and guac over here.
Tequila.
I loved that whole scene. I loved the cantina. I love that the front was like a little store where you could buy, or it looked like it was a store, like the women.
Yeah, like a little grocery store. Yeah,
they had like bowls and like like barrels of stuff.
And we're like preparing things, and then you move into the back, and it's this like lovely cantina. And then I love the whole exchange between the mom, the son, and the father who has the information of where to find the revolutionaries. With Clint Eastwood and Shirley MacLaine. Like, I loved that whole interaction. I was like, I want to hang out with this family. They seem great. I hope Dad gets better.
I did have a note for the dad from the cantina. Is I was just like, because we had a scene where Sister Sarah treats a dying French officer, and then we have an old man dying in a bed, be like, are we going to get an old man dying trifecta in this movie? We need one more old man in a bed dying.
Well, the French general guy blew up. Does that count?
The death scene, we didn't talk about that whole scene when they go into the French camp. I know we're in segments, but
that's fine.
But that scene where she sees So she goes into the French camp because I forget what they're trying to get information about the train or something.
Yeah, like what are they doing? Yeah.
And they see the Mexican revolutionary brought in, and it's the firing squad, and it's all the women crying. And then
that was rough.
And then they shoot him, and it was like even the guys who shoot him are upset. The French soldiers look upset.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa. And then she gets pulled in like, talk about, like, stress. She gets pulled into this dying French officer's, like, bedside because, you know, French, they're Catholic as well.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's dying. You're not a priest, but you're, you know, close adjacent.
Enough, right? Yeah. You're good enough. And he recognizes her, but, like, he can't. Oh, that whole bit. And that she just, great. Like, shoves, I think she shoves the cross in his face to shut him up. Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah.
She's like, kiss the cross. Kiss it. Just kiss it.
As like, adventure-focused and excitement-focused as this movie was, there were some moments of, like genuine, like, oh, like, taken aback. Like, obviously, the mm-hmm. opening scene with the assault, but also that scene with the French general. And also, there's an execution, which hit pretty close to home.
Yeah.
You know? Oof.
Yeah, they didn't pull any punches with, like, ooh, the French are not, like, good no. at all. Right. They are not treating these people well.
And they're not making them, like, a goofy enemy. Like, no.
It's like, these guys freaking suck.
And they are very dangerous.
Yeah.
Sorry to sidetrack.
That was a good scene. Yeah.
It's a good point of discussion.
Yes.
But yes. After those heavy scenes, you'll want to go back to the cantina. Yeah. So there you go.
And have a drink. Yeah.
And of course, we all want to go to San Francisco.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to see what they come up with.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a wonderful palace. Probably a brick front. Oh. You know, requisite, you know, the requisite painting of a naked lady. Mm-hmm. Mirrors.
Of course. Oh, of course.
There's going to be just that beautiful, like, chandeliers. Mm-hmm. Big bar. Ugh.
Rich carpets.
Yes.
Fine wallpaper.
Sign me up.
Mm-hmm. So what was your postcard moment, and which part of the opening credits was it?
Yeah, the, like, in the first frame, like, of the, with the orange sky and, oh, like, yeah. the scrubby trees, and you see, well, you don't know it's Clint Eastwood yet, but he's there with his pack horse and, you know, just going through.
Just the way he wears his hat, you're like, yeah, that's Clint Eastwood. That's him.
Yeah. Yep.
I had two. My first one was him standing on the rock with the gun at the beginning of the movie. I think it's when he's, like, when he has come yeah. across them. And he's got that. That's a good one. I liked that. And then I also... because it was like, oh, that's a cowboy right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the one that I finally settled on was them when they're heading to the Warista camp. And they're coming around. They're, like, coming up that, like, rock face or whatever it is. And it's just, like, coming around that.
Yes.
It was just like, oh, that's pretty.
Yeah, because it's like they were up kind of high. You could see all the farmland, and they're like, oh, that's a good place for them to hide out. Like, you could see things for so far, and it was beautiful.
Filmed on location in Mexico. It was just gorgeous.
It was a treat. It was a treat.
Beautiful. It was also just a fun movie to look at.
Yeah.
Like, the colors were really good, like, which is odd to say, you know, because there was a lot of brown. But, like, the French, and I'm going back to, see, I'm getting all off track tonight. But, like, the French had those, like, bluish uniforms with the pom-poms. Yeah. And the Juaristas were in the white and the browns. But you also had, like, all the other colors. And it was just a fun movie to look at.
Yeah. Sorry to backtrack again, but back to the costumes. But I like that about, like, the Juarista officers. Like, you can tell they used to be in the regular Mexican army mm-hmm. because they'll mm-hmm. have, like, a coat or something. But because you've spent the last 4 or 5 years disconnected from main, you know, supply sources, you're kind of doing whatever you can.
Yep.
Right. Working with what we got.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. What about you, Stu?
Actually, I had the same one that you did, A. That beautiful, like, high contrast orange, like, sunrise. Was that, I guess, the sun? Yeah, it had to be the sunrise. And, you know, with Clint Eastwood in silhouette. Just gorgeous. Slap a stamp on that and send it to your mom. Mm-hmm.
And that, the intro, that kind of brings me into one thing we didn't talk about, which was the music.
Yes. We
have a Ennio Morricone.
I was both delighted and annoyed.
I loved how it was like the theme almost sounded like it had like a donkey kind of sound in it, and I loved
I was like, this is great. Like I wrote down opening shots with the music, the flute into the guitar, and donkey sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I felt like it had a good balance. Like it represented the movie so well of like, it's gonna be tense. Like it had like that kind of like, we gotta do shit on a timeline here. Had the little donkey sound, so it's like, it's gonna be a little silly. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have a good time. Mm-hmm. So,
it
got a props.
Yeah, the music really helped build the tension in it where you're like,
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because like everything was like, because as soon as they found out Bastille Day was in like a week, it's like, well, we got to get all the way over here, and then mm-hmm. we got to get back, and then like, oh, so it's like, yeah,
but yeah, had to call out the music. Growing.
Mm-hmm, yeah, shit. Mm-hmm.
Now I got to blow up a train.
Right,
I got my dry cleaning. I got to go to the grocery store. I got to go to the post office.
God, I got to hammer an arrow out of a man.
I have to change this mule out for a burrow.
Right? Like, these things take time.
Does anybody know how to change a tire? What the fuck?
We need to invent a car. Oh, God.
Oh, Christ.
And at the end of this, I gotta buy a shit ton of dynamite. Oh, wait, excuse me.
Yes.
A fuck ton of dynamite.
Yes. Yes.
Salami too spicy. The French just can't handle it.
No, too spicy.
Also, no lie, I just saw in my notes, I wrote, by minute six, or by 6:18 in the movie, 6:18, we have dynamite. And then in all caps, I just wrote, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dynamite. That was cool how it's like the guy was going to throw dynamite, and then like Clint just walks up, like in any rush. Like, I would have been running. But he's just like, I got time, and then me puts too. It out.
Yeah.
Saves it for later.
Yeah.
You might need that.
So that finally leaves us with the most important part of any Eastwood movie, which is who brought the face?
He happens to be a sweet-looking dude.
Oh, well, I am going to give it to Clint Eastwood. I really enjoyed the face he made when Sister Sarah used his own words against him. Because earlier on, because she's like, don't you fight for anything? And he's like, I fought, you know, like, why'd you fight in that war in America for? And he's like, well, everybody gets to be, God, I should have written it down. You can drop it in. But he's like,
everybody's got a right to be a sucker once. I got you, Amy.
Thank you. Thank you.
There it is.
He says that to her. And then, like, later when Sarah is like, you know, you can take me back as a prisoner to them so that you could do what you need to do. He's like, I don't want to do that. And then she says it back to him. He makes this face that I feel like is such a great mix of disgust, shock, how dare you, and well, you got me there. Like, all of that is in that face. And
that was my face. He's in the cave. They're plotting, and he's just like, God damn it.
Like, okay, I guess. Like, I hate this, but okay.
And I think...
Fine.
And I think that's what I sort of loved about the dynamic of their characters is she cons him left and right, but it's also like she keeps getting one. He's not... He thinks he's in control, and he is not in control.
No.
And he finally has to sort of be like, you are correct, and I do not like it.
Yeah.
And it's this like, it's this dynamic of he's like, I know I can trust her. I know she's right. I know she can do this. And then their whole team at the end, when they do the whole Tex nun thing, it's just a delight. But yeah, that face of him being like, oh God.
God, I said that thing earlier, and now you're saying it again, and I don't like it.
Oh, it is the consequences of my own actions.
Right.
Well, hello, consequences. How are you?
Yes.
My face was not Clint Eastwood.
Oh.
Although I will say, I do, Ben was like, you got to tell him. Ben's face was Clint Eastwood, and it was his scrunched up, like, squinty face while they were shooting the bridge. So that was Ben agreed with you guys.
Solid face choice, Ben.
But mine was when Shirley MacLaine downs the cognac. when she's in the
drinks it like the morning orange juice, just gulps it.
I can't right even down. Drink orange juice that fast. I'm gonna get reflux.
Like her drinking that and just being like, well, shit.
Yes, because it's like they, and I thought that was going to be more of a thing because, like, they need to get her in jail so that mm-hmm. they can open the thing and then the dudes can pop out. So, like, the first thing, Clint's like, can you arrest her? Just throw her in jail real quick. I'll hang with your general. And they're like, nah. And then it's like, come on, put her in jail. Like, what are you, why are you putting her in jail? And they're like, she gets a night of fun before we murder her. Don't worry about it. And they're like, God damn it. We just want to go to jail. Like, put us in jail.
Like
all I want to do is go to jail.
And they're like, oh, I'll let her have a drink of cognac. And she's just like, I'm going to drink this cognac as fast as I possibly can. But I loved that face. I thought it was just so good.
Yes.
A face that said, fine, fuck it.
Yeah. Fine, I'll drink your goddamn cognac.
Her sass in this movie was like just chef's kiss, perfect.
It was simultaneously off the charts, but perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't too good at what she was trying to do. Mm-hmm. That she was like too perfect. But she was just enough of like, I am getting by the skin of my teeth, and I'm thinking of this plan. As I'm going.
Right, yeah. She's like, it's like jazz over here. I'm just making it up as I'm going along.
And just the moments where, like when she picks up that cigarette is also a good face from her. It's a very similar, like, oh, God, yeah, I just need this, like, one.
I just need a little nicotine. Come on.
Because, she's just like, I gotta be a nun so that I don't get murdered immediately.
And then ending with her smoking in the bathtub. Also great.
With that a was huge great. Stogie.
Oh, yeah. So good.
And I'm like, Clint, my man, why are you getting in the tub fully clothed? That just seems like the worst thing ever.
It does.
The chafing.
Again, take your flipping socks off.
I was like, he keeps everything on.
What is
like,
it with these men?
Lee Van Cleef keeps the tube socks on, but Clint, he's like, everything stays on.
Bathwater would be so dirty.
Yeah, I'd be like, get the hell out of my tub, you filthy man. Get your own bath.
Right? Ew.
Yeah.
You want an infection? This is how you get an infection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, not the way to go.
Well, how do you want to rate this thing?
Oh, I liked it a lot. I think I would give it maybe a 4.5 out of 6.
I'm going to give it 4.75. It's pretty good.
I would say 4.5, 5. I really enjoyed it. The first 20 minutes where we get like most of the misogyny with Clint being like pretty lady and being like, calm down, Clint. Once we get past that, like it just ticks along like a clock. It's just so good.
You heard it from us, kids. It's a good one. Two Mules for Sister Sarah. It's a Western classic for a reason. As we've said, there's some distasteful scenes, so violence, assault. Keep that in mind for your viewing experience. Other than that, it's a good movie.
Yeah, a flaming deadfall. A man gets a machete to the face.
That was pretty gruesome.
Although the flaming deadfall, once the character is falling, fully engulfed in flame, it's pretty clear it's a dummy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that is not a real boy.
But the machete to the face, I straight up was like, huh!
I know, I rewound because Andy wasn't paying attention. I was like, you have to see. I will not bear this burden alone.
I totally did it. Tell me when it's over.
Yeah. That battle was bloody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a good movie.
You want to see a movie that ends with a absolute like freight train full of explosions, this is the one for you.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I also didn't talk about her flipping red dress.
Oh, yeah. Oh, her costume at the very end.
Bonus costume corner.
Oh, my God.
Woo.
So here, everyone, picture this. And those of you who follow us on the Insta, you will most likely see a photo of this. Picture Shirley MacLaine in all her dignified glory on the tiniest burrow, just Like,
baby,
giant ears, tiny burrow. Okay, like her feet could be on the. She could walk, and the burrow could walk. Like it's
the burrow could ride her
exactly.
Like,
and she has the teeniest parasol, and the biggest feathered hat, and this absolute like the dress that the red dress she is wearing almost fully engulfs. The burrow. Like, if you didn't know, like, if you didn't see the burrow's ears, you would not see the head. Burrow.
Yeah. And he's trying his best.
And a neckline that is heading south.
Oh, my God. There is little to the left to the imagination. And she just, bright red, like, black lace, big feathers, just 10 out of 10. She's on her way to run that saloon in San Francisco, and Brooke, no guff, no shit.
Yeah. Separate, like, this is my borough. Like, of course I'm riding this borough.
Separate
mine.
Fools from money.
Yep.
Yes.
And she is, she is continually on a mission. But is it now from God? We'll find out.
Nah.
Oh, well, that's good. So, yeah. Again, it's a good movie. You should watch it. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you have questions or comments or movie suggestions, please write to us. We can be reached at cowpunchers, that's multiple cowpunchers, show@gmail.com, or you can see all the faces we referenced, postcards, and other such nonsense, plus wonderful reels made by our very own Amy McLeod on our Insta, which is at
cowpuncherspod.
And so check that out.
I particularly had a delightful chuckle while in the chiropractor's waiting room over the last reel of hunting a Pokemon.
Yes.
That happened to
Sartana
look like
the Pokemon.
Sartana the Pokemon.
So pray for your death.
It's the only thing you can do.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And so, again, thank you for listening. I am, as always, the deputy, Stu Kaufman.
And I am still a tiny bro who's poorly suited to this task. I am Amy McLeod.
And I have a fabulous red dress with the tiny parasol. My name is Melissa Huggins.
Y'all watch yourselves out there on the trail. Yeah!
Ass.